This Week in Survivor on Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by Bet Online. Currently, no MLB, NHL, NBA. You might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you would be wrong. Our exclusive partner, Bet Online, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, as they are bringing the Vegas to you. If you're missing the NFL, no problem. Bet Online has live, daily Madden NFL 20 simulations that you can wager on. If you're into entertainment betting, you can still bet on American Idol, stock prices, or even the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, all open 24 hours a day and all online. Visit the website or use your mobile device to join today to receive your new welcome bonus. Bet Online, your online wagering solution. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner, Podcast One, Bet Online, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code Podcast One for your sign up bonus. Visit betonline.ag. Don't forget that promo code Podcast One for your sign up bonus. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
Let's talk about tweets and take a quiz so we can find out who the smartest one is. What happened this week in Survivor?
Yeah, that's right. This week in Survivor, and we are so hyped up. What a week in Survivor is coming up as we approach the finale of Survivor Winners at War. And back here with me one last time during the regular season, here is the man who is so pumped up right now, Mr. Jordan Kalish.
How's it going, Rob?
It's going well, going well. I'm very excited because this is my second podcast of the day today with this man. He is my co-host of the critically acclaimed Robin Akiva Need a Podcast. He is also the founder of the 32 Fans Sports Podcast. Here he is, everybody's favorite Uncle Kiwi, Akiva Winokur, the king of the class.
First of all, you just said this is the this could be the last Jordan Kalish podcast ever.
No,
right?
We have one next
there's
week.
There's no more.
We have one next week.
What do you mean? I'm not the finale? I thought I was the finale.
Yeah,
the penultimate episode.
You're the penultimate.
Penultimate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh wow! You guys do a recap of the finale on this show. I didn't even remember.
Oh, I think I'm leaning towards maybe doing the whole full week of podcast next week.
Just for I guess why not?
Well, hey,
you
don't know when you're gonna get another bite at the apple.
That's true. That is true. I was thinking like it would be cool if I was on the last ever Jordan Kalish podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although he does, he comes on 32 Fans to preview the draft, but maybe there'll be no more football either. Like, no more Survivor.
Yeah, come
no
on, that'll be too bleak. People optimism right now, Uncle Kiwi.
Yes, they want more Kalish. That's true. They do want more Kalish, the people.
Yes, okay.
Here.
So, Akiva and I are hot off of just recording with Liana Boris. We recorded our Robin and Akiva Need a Podcast, episode number 82 today, where we took Cosmo quizzes, no spoilers. Maybe we should have done our own Survivor version of a Cosmo quiz, but I guess we will take a quiz later on with Jordan Kalish today, so be on the lookout for that if you're interested in knowing how Akiva and I will fare in quizzes from the last decade in Cosmopolitan magazine. But here we are, ready to talk about a two-hour episode of Survivor Winners at War with Akiva. And Akiva is here because he lost a bet some time ago. I don't recall what the bet was that he lost. What do you remember what this was?
Yes, I think what happened was we played a game, not on Robin Akiva Need a Podcast, but on Rehap Proper, where we had various survivors come on and sing songs, a la The Masked Singer, and it was called The Masked Survivor. And I think we needed to guess a certain number of those contestants right for some long forgotten prize. And because we lost
The Masked Survivor,
I had to come on this show. I don't know how, I guess, is that punishment for you? Because I feel like it's mostly I lost, so I have to come on.
It's a pleasure for me. Yeah, I don't know. Somehow, we work together, but you're somehow the loser. You had to come on here. But, you know, look, there was a fight behind the scenes over getting Akiva on the podcast that between myself and then with Mike Bloom, that there was a little bit of a tug of war of who's going to get Akiva this season.
Yeah, but Akiva was contractually obligated to come on here, so we had the upper hand in that negotiation.
Yeah,
yeah, Mike and Liana said, "Do you want to come on?" And I said, "Okay, sure." And they said, mm-hmm. "But FYI, I think Mike, Robin, Jordan are expecting you." I said, "No, I'll do season 41. Whatever happens, I'll I'll come on then because I think we specified that on the Masked Survivor." But then I lost that. You know, I was willing to trade with Jenny Autumn or whatever.
We don't have rules in terms of, if somebody, I think there's been plenty of people who've been on both shows this season. I mean, what I say to Mike and Liana is, let's just try not to book people, two times in 3 weeks or something.
Sure,
you know.
Sure.
Yeah, just let's space it out.
Nobody wants 2 weeks of my Survivor takes. I'm aware of that. Okay. 1 week is more than enough.
All right, so Akiva is, of course, watching season 40. He's watching old seasons of Survivor. He's such a big Survivor super fan right now.
Yeah, I hadn't rewatched a season in many, many years, but I've been rewatching. One of the joys of quarantine has been rewatching Survivor with my 11-year-old daughter. We watched your season. We watched season 6, and then we jumped way ahead to season 28, because I knew she would love Tony, which she did. She walks around all day impersonating Tony. Like to play this fail, Jay. And then she...
One of Tony's famous quotes.
Yeah. Yes. And then... Well, she does talk llama, but she's... I don't know. I didn't want to do that. And then we went to 27 because she loved the idea that, you could bring a family member, even though she's not familiar with, the Tysons and Ruperts of the world. She's not digging it yet, but we're only two episodes into 27. It's very convoluted. You're spending half the time at the redemption challenge. There's only 4 minutes of camp life an episode. It's a weird season so far, 27.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get some of your takes on season 40. And Akiva, do you have any just big picture thoughts about Winners at War as we are now 13 weeks in?
I don't love this rush to anoint a season this is top 10 for sure. This is 11 to 20. Before the finale, because to me, the finale, which is literally in terms of runtime, 3/15, so, a 20%, 1/5 of the season. I hate when people do rankings and stuff before the finale. That being said, I don't think it's possible it could be one of my top five or so seasons, but it definitely can't be anywhere near the bottom. I think it's sort of on a slightly downward progression, but I think the finale could definitely bump the season up a lot.
Sure.
I'm enjoying it.
Jordan, did Dalton Ross do season rankings for Winners at War? Did he update his rankings?
I didn't see them anywhere, but this is the week he normally does it, right? Going into the finale.
Yeah, I feel like I didn't see it either. I wonder if he did or not. I know typically he does, but I didn't see it. I wonder if he is holding out to see the finale.
I mean, I think I've always thought it was weird timing. Yeah. I've always thought it was weird timing to do your season ranking an episode before the show ends, because I don't know how this, maybe for him, it's sort of cemented in what his rankings are going to be before the finale, depending on what season it is. But for me, having a good finale as opposed to an average finale puts a big spin on how good the season is, in my opinion.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. There's been a couple unwatchable finales recently. And remember when it's two, now the finales are 2 hours, 20 minutes, really bleeding in, especially you're now where we're going to Zoom, have a half hour Zoom. It could ruin a whole season to me if it's all right, five people left and we knew it's going to, let's say Caramoan style, where you really know who's going to win the entire finale.
Yeah. Okay. So, Dalton Ross does have the updated season rankings. Akiva, do you want to set an over under for where you think Dalton Ross has them? Then they could go up or down a little bit.
Yeah, I do. He's usually pretty optimistic in real time, unless it's a disastrous season. So I'm going to say he has it at 7, which is absurd. That's my guess.
7, okay. Jordan, are you over or under on 7?
I was going to guess 8 or 9. So I'm going to say, is that over or under? It's higher.
Yeah, well, I would I would say, yeah, I guess technically it is the over.
I think seven's a good guess, though. Yeah. So that's it. Isn't it's
you're
a tough
right.
Over.
He has it at 10. You can check out the full synopsis on EW.com and see how he gets there. But that's he has it at 10, and it could go up by a couple. But it's interesting. Jeff called it very earnestly, Akiva, the greatest season.
I think he said that about Redemption Island. He said that about some weird seasons in the last decade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said that about Worlds Apart as well.
Akiva, so yes. Before the season came on, you were a part of a group of Survivor Mm-mm. podcasters who came on back in June of 2019, way back when, right when the season was filming, and you participated in a draft with Liana Boris, Mike Bloom, and Ali Lasher. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Yes, mm-hmm. I remember it. I think it was as they were starting the season, probably maybe like as day one was starting or something. We did the draft.
Yes, and famously, you had a huge move to open up the draft.
Got to make big moves to win the draft.
You traded up, that I forget mm-hmm. if you were in the third or fourth spot. You traded mm-hmm. up to number one because you needed to get Denise Stapley.
Yeah, how's that looking now?
She's still in the game, still active.
Yeah, still in the game.
She's still
out
there.
You hated that trade. You were making fun of me. You loathed that trade.
At the time, I said I thought this was a bad trade. I thought this was bad value. I think you gave up or did you just swap spots in the third round to move up to number one?
I think I gave up a third round pick and had like two last round picks or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I didn't love the value at the time. Talk us through that Denise being your huge preseason favorite. Where did it go wrong for Denise, assuming she is not looking like she's on the trajectory to win?
I part of it I do think is maybe she probably does not win just based on the edit she's getting would be so bizarre if she does win.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, she's there. She's one of those people who it's like she's never going to be the number one target to vote out, really. Yeah. You know, if she gets voted out, it's probably going to be in a situation like we saw last time where it's like, oh, the person we wanted, you know, Matt got a magical immunity win.
Yeah.
Like Michelle did or something like that. Like it's always she's never the person you're thinking of. And then you get to the end. She can, you know, talk the ear off the jury better than many of the people on the season. I think she has, you know, not to get all Colin Stoney, like if she plays 100 times, she's going to win a whole bunch of times.
So. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot as we've seen, you know, Tony really thrive here in the late game of this particular season, where we've seen people like Denise, like Kim, you know, sort of struggle, like people that we thought were like, you know, really great players have sort of like struggled to get a foothold here. And I wonder, you know, because I do think about Survivor in terms of the way that you would think about a sports league like the NBA or the NFL, and especially like, you know, in listening to the different discussions about like with the Michael Jordan documentary and like, you know, how would, you know, if Jordan played now, like how would he change up his game? I do feel like that while players like Denise and Kim played incredible games at the time that they played, I do feel like that the state of Survivor, the game of Survivor, whether you want to say the league of Survivor, has really radically moved away from the style of game that saw a Kim, Denise, or Sophie, who did great jobs in their original season. But I think that the style of play that is the game now actually has really moved towards the strengths of a player like a Tony. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think there's something to be said there. I do think you need a real number one and possibly number two bullet point on your resume that's like just a gigantic move. You need to have maybe the flashiest move of anybody in the final three. I think, you know, is that making it an even worse situation for women who, you know, haven't been winning a ton in modern Survivor? Maybe.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
She knows that. I think she thought in a weird way, her like, you know, I basically give up speech this week was her weird big move and not the final thing she's going to have to do.
Yeah.
Do you think a Denise would have to win a Final Four fire to really impress the jury? Like, and actually maybe, put herself in there and win it, like do something absolutely crazy. It's a good point that the Denise style. Oh, again, the Denise style is amazing in a Final Two where you can really pick who you're going against much more than Final Three with fire, where you have almost no set. You're just there and it's, whoever you sit next to, you sit next to. It's a good point. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I've been thinking about this a lot because I feel like that where the social game is the superpower of like a Kim Spradlin, Denise has an incredible social game. And I feel like that the social game is actually the least important skill right now for a Survivor player to have, where that if you go back and look at like a Russell Hantz in season 19, where he's sitting there with Natalie and the jury is like, wow, Natalie really got to know me. Natalie knows the names of my kids. Oh, I'm voting for her. I mean, could you imagine that somebody on the jury would say to Tony in the Final Tribal Council, like, hey, Tony, what's my wife's name? What's my kid's name? Like, that would never even come up now anymore.
Yeah, it wouldn't come up and he wouldn't know. And they would barely care.
But you could totally see somebody, like if, Denise is sitting there, or Ben, or Michelle, and the people are like, what did you even do? How did you even get here? What moves did you make? So I think that the Final Tribal Council has really become all about moves, moves, moves. What did you do? And the social game, which is the superpower of so many of these great winners, has been almost, it's like an afterthought.
Do you think it's the new format of the Final Tribal Council that's led to that? Or do you think it's just like the mentality of the players in general?
Well, it's a
production,
it's a lot of things.
I think it stems from also.
Production, yeah.
Because it's in their interest to have the number one quality not be a social thing, which they're not even, haven't been showing, basically. And for it to just be, who's the best strategist and make one, have one or two epic tribal councils. Because ultimately, the show has gone more and more and more towards, we need like two or three absolutely spectacular tribal councils. No, it doesn't matter what happens at 8:22 or at 8:34. At 8:46, we want absolute fireworks. They're pushing it's in their interest for just to be chaos at tribal.
Vantages.
Kim Spradlin style.
Yeah.
Even a Boston Rob style, which, is not really big moves. It's just rock solid alliance. I don't know a great social game, but. Obviously that makes for even worse television when he wins.
Keep going with this analogy of, Survivor as sports, that I was talking about this with someone else earlier this week, that Boston Rob is not really a scorer. He's not like a Tony. Boston Rob is somebody who he gets up on a big lead and then he sits on the lead. That's
runs
basically
the ball. Yeah, absolutely.
He builds up, he gets the numbers, and then he never gives the other side a chance to get into. So he doesn't play like Tony at all. Like, Tony is going to always just be movement, 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 action, and the game. And I don't know if it's like a cause and effect. Like, Tony won in season 28, and then the show said, hey, we need to have a more of a Tony like game every week. Kagyan was great. How do we replicate this? Okay, we need more advantages, we need more idols, we need more twists, we need crazier and crazier and crazier stuff happening. And then Tony happened to come back in an era that has totally evolved to fit the style of gameplay that he plays best.
Yeah, that is interesting. By the way, I was thinking for Boston Rob, I think, and I'm not sure you guys are huge basketball fans, but he's almost like George Mikan. It's like there's not even a shot clock. We're up 11-3, and we're just going to dribble the ball the rest of the game, and then the game is over. Mm-hmm. We don't even have to shoot or anything.
Okay.
I think ultimately Tony will probably be viewed, even if he's next boot, in the first boot in the finale, like possibly the most relevant player of the post Russell era, just in terms of how much he changed the game.
Mm-hmm. So I want to just basically set the stage here for that. We went back and listened to some of the draft that you did with Ali and Liana and Mike. And so you guys went through the entire draft, picked 19 picks, went off the board. and Liana was left with the 20th pick on the board. Let's go back to that preseason draft, which is a fun listen if anybody wants to go back. We'll post a link to it in the show notes. Here's Liana on the clock with the 20th and final pick of the draft.
Okay, can I make my last pick?
Yes. Can we give her an option? Can we give Liana an option?
Since
we don't really know who's on the season, if you don't pick Tony, you get every other winner just in case they're actually on the season.
To be 100% honest, I might take that because of the -3 points that you get.
That he already probably has. If people don't know, I think we're recording this, what are we, like a week into the season? And it's possible that Tony's at home in New Jersey. Who knows?
Yeah, to babysit Boston Robin Amber's kids.
Okay. So, yeah, Tony goes 20 out of 20 to Liana. And you offered to her that do you want the field of people who aren't here instead of Tony because there's a -3 for selecting the first boot?
I mean, that is pretty funny. You have to admit. Like that is, in terms of podcasting, that's good. That's good podcasting.
Yeah.
In terms of being accurate, not great.
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah.
But he had Tony has incredible first group potential.
Sure.
He was so bad on the last season. You know, who knew he was playing possum?
Yeah. And Allie Lasher brings up the point of like, could Tony end up being such a clown show the podcast of that people aren't considering him to be a threat? I don't think that you guys were that out of line to think that Tony has a very strong chance to be the first boot in that season. I definitely thought that it was a possibility. I did warm to Tony as I started to like watch the pregame interviews, saw the tribe that he was on. Also, you know, start to hear interviews with people like Jeremy and people who were talking about like, hey, I need a shield, like, and there's no bigger shield than for Tony. So I started to think that, okay, well, maybe he could hang out for a little bit. Nobody predicted that he would have the success that he's gone on to have here.
No, and I think the fact that he was on Sarah's tribe did make him more of a threat, but I also thought that Sarah had a better shot of being the first boot because of those Dalton Ross pictures where, like, I forgot exactly how many people wrote Sarah's name down, but
like
it was
five or six.
It was a pretty big percentage of the cast. I'm also in a Survivor, draft league, and we actually did an auction draft. I ended up getting Tony for $1, but I didn't even choose him. I just had $1 left, and he was the only person left in the game, and I was the only person left with any money. So I got Tony by default. So sort of like Liana getting him with the 20th pick, I did not think that he had a great chance to win coming into the season.
Okay. Akiva, do you remember who's on your team?
Yes. I started with Denise, as you said.
Okay. All right, I just was here. Let me give you the whole that I pulled the clip of. Here's Mike reading back the results of the draft, and then let's see who ended up winning this draft.
All right, so we have Team Akiva, we have Denise Stapley, Sophie Clark, Amber Berkich Mariano, Sandra Diaz Twine, and Nick Wilson.
Okay, so you're officially, barring a miracle from the edge of extinction, You're out of commission.
Denise.
Yeah, Denise. Okay, so you're all in on Denise then.
Mm-hmm. Team Mike is Tyson Apostle, Yul Kwan, Wendell Holland, Danny Boatwright, and Rob Mariano.
Okay, so Mike, think that Wendell, yeah, I think, went the furthest on his team. I think it's Tyson.
Mm-hmm. I think Tyson. Yeah. I can see Tyson or Rob potentially
so he's
coming back
for a Tyson comeback.
And also, these are teams. This is Allie and myself. It's the A&A versus the B&B. So it's Allie and myself versus.
Okay.
I'm rooting for Allie.
All right, here's the other half of Allie.
Team Allie is Natalie Anderson, Ben Driebergen, Adam Klein, Sarah Lacina, and Parvati Shallow.
Okay, pretty so good. Sarah and Ben, and then maybe you got to hope for a Natalie comeback. And then here's Liana. Mm-hmm.
It's a good-looking team.
Team Liana is Jeremy Collins, Kim Spradlin, Michelle Fitzgerald, Ethan Zahn, and, of course, Tony Vlachos.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. All right, so Michelle and Tony hope or a Tyson comeback for Mike and Liana.
The Liana, the ladies did far better than the fellas in that draft.
Yeah.
No question.
Yeah. So if you go back to RHAP preseason draft, you can go back and take a listen to that. That is a fun one. Akiva, did you happen to listen to Bill Simmons' podcast this week?
Yes. Bill Simmons and Chuck Klosterman. Simmons has, I listened to a lot of his podcasts. I don't think he's mentioned Survivor in about 15 seasons.
Yeah.
I remember he said he was not watching Kagiyan. I do not think he's brought up the word since then. But then a couple months ago, maybe at the start of quarantine, he mentioned that he sent in an application for his wife to be on Survivor without her knowledge, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think he did it the legitimate way when he clearly has, 6 million followers on Twitter. He could have at least gotten, Probst or some casting person to at least take a look at it. But he did not use his connections. And then he's been talking about Survivor a little bit. So he brought on Chuck Klosterman to talk about the season. But then Chuck Klosterman, who, for people out there, he has maybe the best interview of Jeff Probst ever, this amazing Jeff Probst interview in the early Grantland days, which is no longer online. People have asked me to find it, and it appears there's a dead trail to that podcast. He just crapped on the season for like 40 minutes, and Simmons was much more into the season than Klosterman, who was like, maybe Survivor's run its course. And for him, who's admitted, a person who he said he's watched 39 of the 40 seasons, he didn't say which one he hasn't watched, but a casual, not somebody who spends a lot of time probably thinking about it or certainly listening to podcasts about it generally. It was pretty down on it. And he thought like the fire tokens didn't work. And Chuck thought that, there's so much focus on strategy that you really don't know a lot about the people anymore. And there's no focus on survival. And he thinks they should almost, ratchet up the sort of extreme factor, like Naked Afraid, affy the Survivor. I don't know. What do you think? Did you listen?
Yes, I did. Bill Simmons was definitely warmer on the season than Chuck Klosterman. I definitely, agree with a lot of the ideas about how, there's just so much going on in the episode that I do think that it becomes so hard to follow at times for people. So I think that that's like the big note. I disagree that it needs to be more strenuous or harder to make it more compelling. But, the one thing that would do is if there was a story being told of how hard it was, like that is like also like a simple story to tell. And so that would not be, as complicated as, advantages and all the fire tokens and everything else that's going on, which, makes the show, so confusing at times.
Now the fire tokens are done, basically, in 10 minutes into the finale, I think, right? Or almost.
We think
done.
So, but and there's been some sort of speculation of maybe there's going to be some additional role of the fire tokens, but
if you're the fire tokens publicist, you'd hope that there's a role at the final five or something, right? That there's more of a payoff. But that being said, do you think there's any way you'd bring this back if you're planning 41 right now?
So. I think that that's definitely the plan right now, to bring back the fire tokens. But I think that what they need to do, and I would love to get your take on this in terms of of your many interests, including sports and gambling, do you see a path forward that makes more sense for the fire tokens? Because I do think that Nick kind of got screwed, where I think that he was sitting on like a big chip lead, 6 fire tokens, and I think that he was kind of hoping that, hey, I'm down and out, but I got all these fire tokens, so when they bring out that final idol, I'm going to be able to buy it, and I'll be able to be able to completely throw off this whole apple cart because I have all the fire tokens here at the end of the game.
Well, I'd like to see it without Edge of Extinction. I think that would be the plan.
Yeah, I think.
Because with Edge, first of all, there's so much going on that who knows? We literally don't even know. People, the Shannon Gus of the world, who live and breathe and know every single thing about Survivor, I see them saying like, wait, why does this person have X number of fire tokens? If the show is literally not showing it to the 100th percentile of smart fans who don't know what's going on, people listen to 10 Survivor podcasts a week, like there's no hope for the Chuck Klostermans, who are just, watching 42 minutes and while they shut off their brain.
I couldn't tell you what one other person in the game like has in terms of fire tokens.
No, and you shouldn't have to. So it's too complicated, but there's also two games going on because there's the Edge. I would try it once, but I almost think like it shouldn't be for food. I think it should just be for idols. Like you combine, you get an idol, wonderful. And maybe there's a couple extra idols in the game, but at least there's a purpose. Do you know how much everything costs? Like you do 100 podcasts a week about Survivor. Do you know how much...
Not exactly. I know how much some things cost. Yeah.
They're never explained. They've changed at least once. Like, it's too, like, I appreciate that they're trying to make the game more interesting for the players, but like, if you can't show it on TV, it's almost not canon. Why are you even bothering? Like, they've never done this before where it's like, we're going to go so far over the fans' heads, we're not even going to have time to explain it.
Yeah.
So to me, it's a big miss, even though I would not have tried it on a season that had so much going for it already, but I think, you know, if you bring it back, do it without the edge and do it, make it simple, make it work, and then you could try and expand it to other things.
Jordan, we saw the return of Tony's Spy Nest this week. It ended up paying some dividends in terms of Tony overhearing a plan that Denise was talking about with Sarah and with Ben. First off, did Sarah know Tony was up in the tree?
I think it's possible she did, and maybe she even brought Denise and Ben over there because she knew that Denise was going to talk about potentially getting Tony out. But I don't think she necessarily did. It could have been, yeah, that would be entrapment. We have extortion and entrapment now on the season.
It looks so fun when I see entrapment, and I of course I can't do it, but if you look at it, I see in the movies.
You would think, though, Sarah knows, obviously Sarah does know about Tony's spy nest, that anytime she's bringing people over to that area, she would maybe discreetly look up there and see if Tony's hiding. But I do think it's so much fun seeing some of these spy nests and spy bunkers. And Akiva, you guys were actually talking about this in your preseason podcast, too, where I think Mike Bloom called it that there would definitely be some sort of evolution of the spy nest slash the spy shack slash spy bunker on the season, and we've seen it here, and now it's worked where he was able to get some more information.
I think it's kid stuff, honestly. Like, one of the things watching the show with my daughter is, like, obviously she's eating up, and I said, oh, like, if Tony comes back, you know, like, what's he gonna do? And I was like, well, you know, he's got the spy nest and he's got the spy bunker and things like it. Is there any strategic value to it? I really don't think so. I think if you had a post-game interview with anybody who Tony was quote-unquote spying on, do they notice that there's literally a camera pointed at him in the tree half the time? Like, I don't know. It's silly. It's fun. I'm not saying that I have a problem with it, but I don't... Is he making any major... Can he even hear up there? Is he making any, like, major strategical, advances by hearing conversations? I'm not so sure.
Also, if you're in a Final Four alliance with Denise, Ben, and Sarah, you could probably deduce, just based on the way that the game works,
sure,
that they might be talking about trying to get you out in the mm-hmm. fire, making it four anyway. So I think it's even possible that it was, like, you know, some tricky editing where maybe he kind of just figured that out, without seeing that conversation from the spy nest. But I mean, if he did hear it, then I guess it's working. I just don't know what it really changes.
Yeah, and he did hear it. He did go to Sarah, and Nick still got voted out. So I don't know if it really ended up paying off too much for Tony, but it was fun to see it. Akiva, do you have any thoughts on any of the other players this season besides Tony?
Some of it, it's so interesting. Every time, like, a player who's never been voted out before, to me, it's like so striking because it's like, oh, I thought, you know, Kim Spradlin was infallible, and, you know, like, we've never seen Wendell get voted out. And even, like, Nick, not a power player, but it's like, wow, you know, for a while I thought, like, oh, Nick could do this twice. Like, maybe that's the perfect skill set. And I just think it's been so, it has had this incredibly epic feel that really, even more so than maybe Heroes Villains, that only happened on All-Stars, where it's like, it's like watching the All-Star game, but as the Super Bowl, like, everyone's trying so hard. It's so fun. I don't know, like, how you could really top this cast wise, but it has truly been a delight to, just watch 20 winners. And really, like, there's not been anyone who's like, oh, I wish they weren't here. And I wish, maybe there's a couple early people you'd rather have, but I don't know. It's been great to see, sort of Goliaths of the game, no pun intended, fall and, whoever wins this, it's going to be such an icon. It's crazy.
Yeah. Okay.
My thoughts on the rest of the cast. I just don't understand how Tony and Sarah are both immune, are both not immune at the final six, and they or at the final seven, and they don't get any votes. Like, to me, the clear strategy here was to split the votes on them. You had the opportunity to do it, and I really think the only person who is really, besides Tony and Sarah, who's really doing anything that makes sense is Ben. And it's the only reason why is that Ben, I don't think, could beat anybody. So he needs to go with the people who are at least going to, who are at least planning on going with him to the end. And maybe he'll get a little, I don't know what the pay scale is on the season, but I guess he gets a little bit more money if he makes it to the final three as opposed to like the final six or five.
Michelle doing that's not making sense?
I mean, I think Michelle did. I mean, it's, I put it
she
more
doesn't have the
on,
numbers, right?
Yeah, well, she doesn't have the numbers now, but I mean, I put it more on Denise and, you know, and Nick, who gets voted out here. And even Jeremy, I mean, why was the plan to get Ben? Why was the plan not to get, Tony and Sarah? And you talk about the social game before, while the social game, I think doesn't, you know, it's harder to make a social game argument at the final tribal council, but having relationships is still something that gets you, further into the game. And I think Tony and Sarah are just doing a masterful job, building bonds with people. And for whatever reason, even though they're the two biggest threats, Michelle's pointing it out and they still don't get votes.
Yeah, Denise and Ben should be voting with Michelle and Nick at this final six tribal council. You could split the votes 2-2-2, put two on Tony, two on Sarah, vote out whoever doesn't play the idol on the revote. I think that the edge of extinction complicates things, where maybe then they say like, oh, okay, well, if we go ahead and we vote out Tony or Sarah, then maybe they're like, oh, well, the edge of extinction person could come back and vote with Nick and Michelle. And so could have a 3-3 tie. But at some point, I think you got to go for broke here and knock out Tony or Sarah.
I completely agree. And I actually think at this, what's going to now be another final six with the edge person, I think having the edge person in the game in the short term at the final six vote actually benefits Tony and Sarah, because I think where they would be the obvious choice to go after, I think now the edge person's going to be coming in. They've left for the season right after seeing Chris Underwood win the game. I could kind of see a vote split between like the edge person and Michelle, which I don't think makes all that much sense. Like, I think you should probably split the votes on either Tony and Sarah or the edge person and either Tony and Sarah. But I think that Tony, Sarah, Ben, and Denise have this final four alliance. I don't know if anyone is flipping from that. And I kind of think that since the edge person is going to have an idol, I kind of think Michelle maybe gets like, you know, idol or vote splitted out of this final six.
Okay.
Yeah. Rob, I have a question. So
yes.
you said, oh, you know, it's weird that Jeff said that this is the best season ever when, although it's been a very good season, that's not apparent to, I think, the average person watching the show. What about the fact that Jeff said that Ben is on his Mount Rushmore of survivors? What is like, and Ben's legacy has taken as hard a hit as maybe any survivor, any of these 20 people, right? He's definitely in the top three or four. Like, what did he see out there? Did he think a different edit was going to happen, that Ben was the mastermind? I mean, yeah,
okay, how about this? Let's do Mount Rushmore. Let's do Mount Rushmore. Okay, Mount Rushmore, you know, a huge hit on Rob as a podcast. Who's the Mount Rushmore of Survivor? Is it as easy as Rob, Parvati, Sandra? They go, they're 1, 2, 3. Are they the locks?
Boss and Rob is obviously on the Mount Rushmore. Sandra's definitely on it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, they built half of the Survivor Mount Rushmore last season.
Literally, they're on it. I don't think Parvati, after this season, is that
Parvati
clear
cut. May not be a lock.
Yeah, I don't think she's a lock. I mean, we're thinking two micro. I think you still have to put Richard Hatch on it, honestly.
Yeah. Going into the season,
Richard Hatch is 100 times more important than Parvati, ultimately, in the scheme of, you know, in the grand scheme of Survivor.
And then it's 26.
Like, and then it's like, I mean, I almost want to say like half of Russell, half of Tony is my fourth one.
So,
because I do think Russell's the most important person in the post season 8 history of Survivor. I'm not a Russell fan at all, but I think he's, you know, I've said this before, I started watching, you know, I had stopped watching for a couple seasons, and it's like,
he's super
just
important.
The ads.
Yeah.
He's so important in the history of the show, and just the, you know, the adding, and maybe not for good always with, but just, you know, bringing in the sort of idol era, which we've been in for 22 seasons now, basically.
Yeah. So just to go back to,
I mean, if Tony wins, it's hard to keep him off the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Go back to Jeff. I think that this was part of like a event that he was doing at Google. He was actually being interviewed by DK Chillin.
Was it at Ben Dreeberger's house?
No. So, and this was before the season. So if, you know, that let's say hypothetically, Tony is going to win the season on Wednesday, which I would think he odds on favorite to win. So, you want Jeff in February, and they say, Jeff, who's on the Survivor Mount Rushmore? To say, and so I think he's just who's somebody who's going to go far in the season, and I'm not going to spoil the season.
Right.
So I think that he just says, Ben, he's like, oh, they're all villains. Let me come up with somebody who's a hero. And I think that's this is not necessarily something that he's, great at maybe if he had a while to answer the question, he'd come up with a better answer, says Kim or something like that. But I think that this was just he can't say Tony in that spot.
Sure.
Without spoiling the season.
Right. If he says Tyson, everyone assumes Tyson wins the season.
Right. So he's like, and I think that if you look at like what he says, he's like, oh, okay, I need a good guy. All right, let me think. And then I think he says Ben. But I think that Ben is probably not on the Mount Rushmore. Jordan, if it's Tony as the winner, he's on the Mount Rushmore, right?
Yes. If Tony wins again, he's absolutely on the Mount Rushmore. I would have said coming into the season that, yes, it was the four people that we've spoken about, Rob, Parvati, Sandra, and Hatch. It's harder for me to take Hatch off than it is to take Parvati off, as Akiva, he made that point.
He's like the George Washington.
Yeah, even though I think Parvati, I think Parvati is probably higher on my, who's a better player list, just because both of their winning games were extremely impressive, but then Parvati was able to do it again and play a very strong game in Heroes versus Villains, even though she didn't win. But I would be more likely, I also think that Parvati's probably a better player than Boston Rob, but you can't take Boston Rob off of the Mount Rushmore because they literally built a Mount Rushmore of him and Sandra. So as far as who's more iconic, I think it would be, if Tony wins again, I think it would be Tony, Rich, Boston Rob, and Sandra. And if Tony doesn't win, then we'll see. We'll see what happens in this finale.
Do you automatically go on Mount Rushmore if you're a two-time winner? FDR has the most terms. He's not on Mount Rushmore.
Should Grover Cleveland be on there because he was president two different times?
Yeah.
Yeah, he should be on both sides of the Mount Rushmore, where on the left and the right side.
Parvati off. I'm leaving her on.
Would you put her ahead of
Sandra?
No, I'll put her ahead of Hatch. Boston Rob sort of has that role of sort of like the old school person, the person who embodies the show. I mean, they didn't even include, Hatch in the Winners at War season. So,
but that's not because of his he's not relevant enough,
So why are we putting him on the Mount Rushmore?
Well, he's still important,
Mount Rushmore is in.
We're not giving him money.
If you go to if you went to the Survivor offices, they've got Mount Rushmore in the lobby. If they're not putting him on the season, they're not putting him on Mount Rushmore.
Okay, it's the same reason why Hatch is ineligible.
It's the same reason why George Washington is on the actual Mount Rushmore. Is the OG?
Yeah.
Well, I really like Parvati and I really dislike Russell, and I'd still put Russell over Parvati.
Oh, I wouldn't. I don't think Russell. I do think Russell is an iconic Survivor player. Don't get me wrong. If you're doing a Mount Rushmore that has 10 people's faces, even though I don't think he's a top 10 Survivor player, I do think he would be on the 10 person Mount Rushmore, which is too many faces at this point. I think we should limit it to four. But I don't think winning twice necessarily gets you on the Mount Rushmore, but I do think it puts you in definitely the top five of top Survivor players, if Denise or Michelle or Sarah were to win the game. They're not on the Mount Rushmore, but they are near the top of the list of who's the best Survivor player.
I think you guys are getting caught up in that you're in the Survivor Hall of Fame. It's Ty Cobb's a bad guy, but he hit 400, I gotta put him in. The Mount Rushmore, this is promotional material. So this is our brochure. So
we're for
Survivor.
CBS. We're the publicists.
Yes.
We're not
the publicists for Survivor.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah. I mean, that I don't think that the Mount Rushmore is that somebody examine the resume of who were the four greatest presidents and let's go ahead and go through. I don't even know how's Teddy Roosevelt even on there?
I don't know. Who picked Mount Rushmore?
Was he the one that gave the green light? Is Teddy Roosevelt the top four president?
He's not even a top two Roosevelt. He's not even a top one Roosevelt.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know how exactly this happened.
He did get shot and then gave a speech right after that. That's pretty badass. It's like wearing a beanie hat in the Amazon.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So
Jordan also said that a guy threw a shoe at George W. Bush, so that makes him eligible.
So I think it's not necessarily the it's fluff, Mount Rushmore.
Okay. All right, if it's fluff, then let's just put, like, I don't know, like, good-looking people on there or something.
No.
Zaddy Yerger on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Yeah. Look,
it's promotional.
It's the DVD cover of the 40-season box set. Put it that
way.
Well,
then there's six people, I think, that maybe get to go on.
Okay. All right, fine. How about this? All right, 40-season box set. Who's mm-hmm. on the DVD cover?
40 seasons, okay. One box set. Okay, Boston Rob.
Yeah.
And how many do we get,
though?
Six.
Should we?
Six? Okay.
Should we throw them off with like a fake spoiler?
Put no.
Like Zane, Angie Layton on them?
Okay. All right. Six people.
Blake Townsend.
Okay.
Okay, fine.
I see. Now I think you can have Russell on there and Suri.
Yeah. Russell, Suri, and you don't put Tony on?
No. Well, do we have Tony and Russell? Are we? Oh, like, who else would be in the mix?
I think if Tony loses, Russell, and if Tony wins, Tony gets the spot.
Okay.
How about that?
So, but you're going to have Hatch?
Yeah, Hatch, and then you have Hatch, Suri, Parvati, and Boston Rob, and Sandra. Is that seven?
Is there any?
I agree with that six. I think if you're doing seven, then you put Russell on. But I also think, you know, Russell, even though he is obviously a big name, I think he's also a controversial character, so that could potentially take him off.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want him, you know, honestly, if you were
there's like, no one who who's doesn't cause, like Suri.
Right, who's going to cause, if you were a producer and you're like, who's going to cause me more trouble, like, if my only goal is to not, like, get sued or whatever, it's like, you at least have the conversation, like, if we had to cast Hatch or Russell, like, which one do we cast? Like, you at least have that conversation at corporate.
Why? Who do you think is closer to getting back on the show, Russell or Hatch?
Oh, that's a good question. I think if they were going to put on Hatch, they had a pretty good spot for him right now.
I think Russell's closer.
But not close at all. I think if he, like, cleaned up his act, it's not over for him.
Yeah.
There was no, like,
I don't think it's over for him. I think he's a lot.
But I think
he's a lot
closer.
There's
a chance he's cleaning up his act. I think he's like getting worse and worse. Probably.
No,
I disagree.
I've spoken to him recently.
Okay, well then I apologize, Russ. If he turns his life around, God bless him. Then he'll come back on the show.
Yeah,
it's amazing that we've been having this conversation now for like 5 minutes and Rupert's name has not come up at all, which I don't think it should. Like,
it's funny because I just watched. You know, I said I started 27 with my daughter. And so the first thing she ever sees of Rupert is like him being the first boot of like a 20 person, you know, mess of a season. And she has to be thinking to herself, like, I was like, you don't understand. They gave this guy $1 million just for being popular. Mm-hmm. Like, not that many years. Like, it's hard to explain the, like, maybe we need a fifth Rupert if we have some sort of, like, you know, Heroes Villains 2 in a few years or something. Like, we might need one more Rupert just to, not that I like Rupert, but like, it's just such a terrible way for like the guy who is by so far the most popular person to go out.
Yeah.
I feel like if you're expanding the box set or the DVD cover to like 10 people, I think you do put Rupert on there. And then Rob, honestly, I think you might be in the conversation as well if we're expanding it to 10 people.
Boston Rob?
Seth Sternino. Like, Boston Rob's already on there. I think
Jordan
if you're expanding this to 10 people.
He's getting a raise, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. You're getting a raise. Yeah. George
Costanza
style.
Are you trying to butter me up for your own podcast this summer?
No, I mean, well, yes, but I mean,
no,
that's,
he's
going
to ask
not,
you to be on. He wants to ask you to be on his fake Amazing Race season.
Oh, is that what this
his
is?
Quarantine Amazing Race. Yeah,
nice try, buddy.
The Circle season two. No, I
have
messages. Look, I mean,
like, yeah, Jordan Kalish has me.
Let the guy talk. Yeah.
Let's throw one to the super fans. Like you're a big voice in the community. You were for a long time known as the best player to never win. Do casual fans who are like watching the show now know who Rob Cesternino is? Probably not. But we're saying the top 10, like the top 10 most iconic players. Are you not in there?
Jordan. That I appreciate it, but I think that unless we're polling the listeners of this podcast, I think that probably I appreciate it. I appreciate it, but
I mean, I think like the other people we've like Rupert Russell, like I think they get in before you. But if we're extending it to 10, I think you have a shot.
Yeah,
you and Blake Townsend.
Me and Blake Townsend. Yeah,
and Brian Corden.
I appreciate it. All right, you ready to talk about some Survivor social media?
Yes.
Okay, sure. Okay, let's take it away. Jacob Sager-Weinstein.
Tweets, baby, tweets, they are always on fleek. They cram more into a very small space than a 5-day week. Tweets.
Yeah, okay. Akiva, by the way, what did you think about the big like hype video at the end of the 2-hour episode?
I hated it just because I thought we're going to get the challenge or something. I mean, at a certain point, I realized like we're not going to. But I, you know, I was looking forward to seeing who's going to come back. And though we're going to have that challenge, and we're going to be at 6, and then we're going to have 3 immunity challenges and 3 votes, or I guess not 3 votes, but
yeah. Well, the 6 and 5 vote, and then the final 4 fire making
the fire. Yeah,
it was a disappointment to me too. I also thought that like each of these tribal councils, like they're ending, you know, with 20 something minutes left in the hour. I thought we were going to get like some crazy vote where it was like a tie or something.
Rob tweeted. Yeah.
Yeah. So the only way that I think this is fine, like I didn't like having this last 20, whatever minutes of Edge of Extinction stuff and basically the promo for the next episode. I think it's going to be all fine if like we start the next episode and they're just on the mat, ready to go into this Edge of Extinction challenge. No BS before this. We already got that last week. We don't need it here.
Okay. We'll see.
I had the same thought as Rob. Yeah. I was like, I was all excited. It's like 9:33 and we're voting and it's like, there must be something crazy happening. And then they had an hour, 40 minutes of content and they just stretched and stretched it out. You know, maybe you don't even see that much of, let's say, the Natalie Tyson scene.
Yeah.
If Natalie Tyson lose, can they give someone their idol? Can they like throw Boston Rob if he wins the challenge their idol? No.
Akiva, do you think that there's any sort of spoiler in who comes back from the Edge of Extinction? So hear me out. Hypothetically, Boston Rob is going to win the Edge of Extinction challenge. Do you think that they would show us that at the end of the episode? Because that feels like a very like Game of Thrones way to end the episode of like
unbelievable
the big battle. Yeah. And it's like, okay, it's Rob like just got back in. Now, okay, like, all right, Rob, here's your buff. Go join the tribe. Dun,
well,
dun.
Let me ask you, this is a great question, but, you know, as someone who watches The Challenge, who will often end the show in the middle of an exciting challenge, then, you know, make you stay tuned for the next week. What if it was like Boston Rob is about to win or about to lose, and it's like, to be continued next week?
Yeah, like the Rob and Tyson, basically, mano-a-mano at the end of the last Edge of Extinction challenge.
Yeah, and by the way, we're going to have to watch that whole thing again, because I assume that's the, you know, previously on, that's 7 minutes long, that they already put on Twitter, but it's also going to be, you know, 8 to 8:07 of the finale,
I think we got to get the short version of that.
No, I don't think so. That's Big Brother does like 40 minutes usually for that last one. Like, they love, a lot of people just watch finales of shows. CBS loves putting that in.
Yeah, I think we got to get the short version.
Let's do an over-under.
Okay, let's do this. Yeah. Let's do this. Yes. Over-under on the this season on Survivor, 2 minutes flat.
I'd bet my children it's over 2 minutes.
Wow.
Not that
I don't want your children.
I know.
I'm sure they're lovely.
I would have gone over like 4:10 even.
4:10.
Oh no! So I don't think it's going to be that long.
It was 7 minutes. They just had nothing to show.
They got a lot to get to. They got a lot to get to with this finale.
I know.
Give any thoughts on the Zoom finale?
But I think the Zoom finale is not going to start till like 9:27 because it's been getting late. I say this every time I come on the podcast. It's been getting later and later every year because they realize like the actual show is more exciting than the finale. We don't need to speak to, you know, little kids in the crowd. But I also think, like, with the Zoom, are they going to tape it also?
I'm not sure. I suspect that they will. I don't think it's going to be live. I do think that they will do check-ins with people. Like they'll come in, like, all right, Michelle. What's it been like for you this season? I do think that they'll probably, like, take a note from, like, and I don't know how much, like, the Survivor producers, like, look at sports, but how well received the NFL draft was, especially on a season where they brought the loved ones out for all of the different players. Like, I think that they're going to probably take that opportunity.
20
to,
living
like,
rooms? That would be fun.
I think
like,
we're going to...
families?
Yeah, I think we're going to see like the families watching the show with their survivors. Mm-hmm. So I think that they might end up making a little bit more of a meal of that.
Yeah. Could we do a draft offline of like who's going to be the worst social distancing family who has like 20 people watching with them?
Who's going to have the most people in the shot?
The most people in the shot that do not live under their roof. Yeah, that would be funny.
I don't know. Well, we can count them. Everybody write down a name and then see if you're right on Wednesday. Okay. All right, let's talk about social media. By the way, so Denise, Akiva's big bet. Went all in. This was like he pulled off the Ricky Williams trade for he went all in to move up and grab Denise. Endure and let go. She tweeted, needed a minute to take a breath and remind myself about what really matters, all this. And she got the endure and let go tattoos.
Wow.
So I guess she's back on social media now?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
That's good news.
Okay. All right. Kiva, what do you think? I know you're not a tattoo guy. Endure and let go as a tattoo.
Can this be an option for Mike Bloom?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, endure and let go.
We're talking about endure and let's go.
What about if it's let it go? Endure, let it go, and then there's like Anna and Elsa there, but they have a buff. They're playing Survivor.
I think everything's on the table.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he has veto power. I did ask Mike already. You told me this idea, which is wonderful, which is you said this on this week's podcast, right?
Mike Bloom is going to potentially end up getting a Survivor tattoo if we are able to raise $23,000 for PPE for doctors and nurses by way of the GoFundMe or Rob is a Podcast patrons.
What are we at now? How close are we?
The recording time, we're still in the 21,000s.
So he really wants the tattoo. He wants this tattoo.
Yes. Yes. It has not moved the needle yet. But that being said, people may not have listened to that podcast yet. robiswebsite.com/PPE charity.
Well, there's a lot of Twitch loyalists who just come straight here. They will not listen to
the one podcast a week they listen to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, so if you're absolutely listening to this, go to so Rob does a feedback podcast every week where he takes questions from the listeners. I don't know if you've ever heard it before, but Mike Bloom is on there. Listen to that. And then give money to the PPE so Mike Bloom could get a tattoo.
Thank you. Thank you for the recap of what we're talking about.
But Mike did tell me I think he'd be willing to put in one wild card where he has no veto.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
I think so. All right. Don't quote me.
Kim Spradlin and the Denise thing that I'm not sure she's back on Twitter yet. That might be from Facebook or Instagram. I'm not sure how the Rob is a Podcast interns put this stuff together.
I see it on Twitter, but it may have been a cross post if that's what you mean.
Yes. Yes. Okay. All right. Kim Spradlin tweeted out a poll. What does it mean when a survivor says you can trust them 100%? She said nothing or nothing. Do you think it was the top nothing or the bottom nothing, Akiva, as a person who tweets out a lot of polls, was the big winner?
I think the top
nothing
probably won. People are lazy. They probably just went for the first one.
Yeah, that's right. 68.1%. Okay.
I want to ask you guys, do the social media segment every week. Who was one of the 20 member cast? Who was one the social media season?
Tyson has probably been the most prolific. A lot of people started out active, have been less active. Michelle has been consistent all season long.
Yeah, Michelle's good on social media. Tyson's always good.
Yeah.
Yule started great, but then I think they sort of told them they can't post as many things as they've been posting on social media.
Yeah,
Tony's been
on
fire since he's come back.
Yeah, and then Tony's been, he started out hot, and then he's a little bit stalled out here.
Adam's been pretty good.
Yeah, Adam's been on and off over the course of the season. Then Brett LaBelle said, I love Denise, love her. However, as a Survivor CBS purist, never say you're on the block tonight. It's way too add CBS Big Brother.
Mm.
Yeah. Chaos Cass, she's been on fire lately on social media. She said, I call BS on the first person being voted out, being able to accumulate wealth and eat tubs of peanut butter, sheerly due to the fact that they were voted out first. Hashtag Survivor. She goes on, yes, Nat is a great athlete and competitor, but it's still unfair. If you haven't played Survivor, you need to check yourself. The mental toll of constant paranoia and playing in the game far outweighs sitting on the edge of extinction, biding time until you can gain an advantage without consequence.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I mean, I think this is part of the problem with pairing the Edge of Extinction with the fire tokens. I do think the fire tokens are an interesting idea. I do think they need to tweak a lot of what they've done, and you know they'll have some time before the next season to think of some new ideas. But pairing this with the Edge does give the person who got voted out first or who gets voted out really early an advantage that the other players don't have. So I think the real answer is just get rid of the Edge. But if you are going to have the Edge again, you got to change the way the fire tokens work, because Natalie, while I do think she'd be one of the people in the running to get back in the game no matter what because she's such a good athlete, her being on the Edge for so long did give her a huge advantage in how many fire tokens she has.
Okay.
Rob, can I say, if it's such a great advantage, then get voted out second and go to the Edge and, you know, have 15 fire tokens for this one challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody would take that. And obviously that would ruin the show if people were willing to just, hey, I don't care, let me go, you know, I'm Ozzy, I'm going to, you know, win the final challenge. Let me just go get fat on, you know, Edge of Extinction and get 15 tokens. That, you know, that if people aren't devastated when they get voted out, ruins the show. But I don't think there's anybody who's willing to do it. Yes, it's, you know, a little bit of a soft landing, but nobody's going to be like, yeah, I'd rather be second than have even a 10% shot at being, you know, in the game when there's seven people left.
Okay.
And also, I talked about the challenge before. I think we need to see Natalie on the next challenge.
Yeah.
I think we're talking about one of the great female athletes of all time.
Yeah.
She'll just destroy people there.
It'll be interesting.
Jay Starrett, spoiler alert for this season of The Challenge, won two challenges. I think Natalie might be able to run the table and just demolish people.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if we'll see more and more crossover with one big Viacom family how much if Jay is going to pave the way for more survivors too.
TJ said we will definitely see you again, Jay, when he got voted out. Like, they love Jay on the show.
Yeah. Okay. RHA Polster on Twitter tweeted out a couple of questions about this week's episode. Who was this week's MVP for the episode? Akiva, who do you think that the listeners of this podcast and followers of RHA Polster said was the MVP of this episode?
Who are the choices in the poll? Do I have options or no?
Oh,
it's not a Twitter
players,
poll, so it's everybody.
All the players
okay,
that
I
are in the
it was
game.
A Twitter
yeah.
poll. Michelle Fitzgerald.
Michelle Fitzgerald, that's right. 54%.
Yeah.
What do you think our listeners thought was the better tattoo, Jordan? Endure or Let Go?
I think that Let Go.
Let Go? Nope, Endure. Okay. And Akiva, knowing that the opinion could change on the results of the finale, how do you rank this season? Top five? Top 10, but not top five? Top half, but not top 10? Or bottom half? What do you think listeners said?
I'll say they said the second option, but I'm saying the third.
Okay. Top 10, but not top five.
Correct.
Okay. Jordan, you agree or disagree?
I do agree with that. I think top 10.
Yep. That's the 48% said top 10.
A little bit recency bias, but you know, again, could get there.
Top five. Okay. All right. Let's see what Jordan Kalish has cooking as we get ready to play the This Week in Survivor History quiz. Okay. All right. Jordan, some controversy yes. last week.
A little bit.
Akiva, are you familiar with last week's debacle of a conclusion to This Week in Survivor History?
Yeah. So as far as I understand from what I read in the papers, you won.
Yes.
But then,
I kept my, I have like a, what, how many week winning streak do I have?
How many weeks has the season been? You only lost to Taryn in week one.
Okay.
Wow.
So am I 12-1 or 11-1 this season?
I think something like that.
Yeah. This
That's
is like,
amazing.
Old school, like wrestling of like, I've got like some win streak and then I have like the ref, covering his eyes when I'm getting pinned and stuff like that. So, what
Except
a wild
apparently
run.
You lost last week.
But
That's
I won.
What I'm
I won.
I was told that Frail Mary checked the tape. And that, you know, using instant replay, you lost.
No, there was definitely a questionable call on the field, but that was a win.
So it was like the Fail Mary, not
the
Hail
Yeah,
Mary.
The Fail Mary.
The Fail Mary.
Okay.
I would say it's a tie, because look, that question would, if the answer
you
was...
You could say it's a tie, but it was a win.
Kim, look, yes, the call after the quiz, when the quiz was over, you did technically have more points. Like, bad, refs make bad calls in sports all the time. I mean, I watch a sport where Angel Hernandez.
I'm 11-1 with an asterisk.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you an asterisk. You have like an Astros asterisk on your win streak right now.
Yeah.
Week 12 is an asterisk. But yeah, look, I watch a sport where Angel Hernandez and Joe West constantly make bad calls. So the result, I think.
What sport is that? Korean baseball?
That is MLB baseball. But look, it would have been, I'm calling it in my head, a tie at least. I told Rob's fact checker that it should be counted as a tie.
As long as it's just in your head. Okay, yeah. Let's get to this week's quiz. Now, Akiva, I thought that you might be coming in here with a pinch quizzer this week.
I thought about it, but I figured if I'm going to take down the guy who was, and of course I knew all about your streak before 2 minutes ago, if I'm going to take you down, I'm going to do it, mano a mano. I'm going to end the streak Undertaker style, by myself and not use any outside tomfoolery.
Okay.
There were people that said I would have a pinch quizzer, but I chose to go this route alone.
All right.
And I have no chance of winning.
Okay.
All right. So we have four multiple choice questions. Akiva, you've played the quiz before, but just as a reminder, if you want to hear the multiple choice options, you can. And if you do, a correct answer will be 1 point. Your opponent cannot steal if you go for one. If you go for two, that means you don't hear the multiple choice options, but your opponent could steal 1 point if you are incorrect. For the multiple choice options, we may have some choice D fake answers prepared. I don't know. I know you're not a big fan of those. I hope they don't enter the quiz. And then we'll go to a final round where both of you will be able to receive points.
Okay.
Got it? So here are the categories. I do have categories this week. I have Not Detective Dean's List, Deets of Strength, It's Okay If It's in a Four-Way, and Drop the Mic.
Okay.
Akiva, you're the guest. You get to choose first.
Drop the Mic.
Drop the Mic. So we're going to Survivor Worlds Apart. The episode is Holding On for Dear Life from May 6, 2015, 5 years ago Wednesday. Mike Holloway won every immunity challenge after Joe Anglin was voted out at the final 10, with the exception of one. After Joe was voted out, who was the only player to defeat Mike in an immunity challenge?
It's not multiple choice?
If you can get the multiple choice, but if you want to go for two, you'll have to guess without multiple choice.
Okay. Yeah, so after Joe's voted out, who's the only person to beat Mike?
Mike in an immunity challenge.
Give me multiple choice.
Okay. Is it A, Rodney, B, Tyler, C, Carolyn, D, Craigslist Carl?
I forgot about the choice D, Rob.
I haven't done it all season, but since you were coming back, I decided to do a couple.
I was leaning towards, someone who wasn't even in there. So I'm going to say Carolyn.
Carolyn is correct. She is the only one to beat Mike in a challenge. Tyler did win an immunity challenge, but it was before this run that Mike Holloway went on, before Joe Anglin was voted out. This is where Mike had to play his idol, and so he was still immune at the tribal council, but it was because of the idol, not because of the winning the challenge. Rob, we have Not Detective Dean's List, Deets of Strength, and It's Okay If It's in a Four-Way.
I'll say Not Detective Dean's List.
Okay, so we're going all the way back to the Australian Outback. The episode's called The Most Deserving. It's actually the finale from May 3rd, 2001, 19 years ago Sunday. We all know that Colby won the final three immunity challenge and decided to take Tina to the final two. This challenge was a trivia competition about their fellow contestants. On the deciding question, which Colby got right and Tina got wrong, Jeff asked whose proudest accomplishment was being on the Dean's List in college for five semesters. Which Australian Outback juror was the correct answer to this question?
Okay. I'll take a big swing here. I'll say it was Nick.
Nick is incorrect. So Akiva, you can earn 1 point here. You don't hear the multiple choice options, but you can get 1 point if you get this right.
Okay, so who won the jury's most
proudest accomplishment being on the Dean's List for in college for five semesters?
Amber Berkich.
Amber Burkish is correct, Akiva. You get a bonus point, and you have 2-0.
It seems like such an Amber thing to say.
Yeah. So
I would have said Elizabeth. That would have been my second guess.
It was obviously I was deciding between those two, but it seemed like a very Amber thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
So Rob, you said Nick, just like Tina also said Nick Brown here. So
yes,
you
and
your friend Tina Wesson said the same thing and both got it wrong. So Akiva, you're up 2-0, and you get the next question. So you have you can do either.
Can I end the game right now with a one pointer?
That's the Boston Rob move.
No, you can't. Deets of strength, or it's okay if it's in a four-way. If you get 2 points on this question, Rob gets 0 points on the next question, you mathematically win.
Wait, if I get one, how can he get three?
If you get 1 point on this question, you'll have 3
all right,
points total.
I think we could just keep going, and then we don't have to work out the scenarios where you can clinch. Your magic number is 2.
Jordan, Rob, I think, is rattled.
Yeah. I think so, too. He hasn't lost in a while.
Alrighty.
So do you want deets of strength, or it's okay?
Oh, so I thought you said deans of strength. I didn't want anything from, like...
Deets.
Deets of strength, or...
No, 2 dean questions.
Last season is not this week in Survivor history.
I don't want deets of strength. Give me the other one.
Okay, it's okay if it's in a four-way. We're going to Redemption Island. The episode is called You Mangled My Nets from May 4th, 2011, 9 years ago Monday. Who came in first place in the Redemption Island four-person duel that was combined with the season's loved one's reward?
Ugh. If you gave me the options, I'm not going to know it. Give me the options.
Okay, is it A, Andrea Belke, B, Matt Elrod, C, Mike Cheezel, D, Eric Tomlinson?
Jeff Cumberland, he means, Rob.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Matt Elrod.
Matt Elrod is incorrect. The correct answer is Mike Cheezel, who is out of the game. He won the duel, and then he actually gave the family visit. Instead of seeing his mom, gave the family visit to everybody who was still in the game. So the other people on the edge were not a big fan of this move. Yeah, Andrea Belke was not even on the edge at this point. It was Ralph, but I figured she was a better fake answer to win that challenge. So Akiva, you don't get a point. Rob, this is the last question. You could either tie Akiva up here with 2, or you can still be trailing with 0 or 1 if you get it wrong or get
those
it right with the multiple choice.
Yes.
Those are the possibilities.
I still want to know how, if I had gotten a third point, Rob could have tied me, but I don't know how this game works.
Because he could get 2 points on this next question. So there's a final round. Survivor Panama, this is Deets of Strength. We're going to Survivor Panama. The episode is Bamboozled from May 4th, 2006, 14 years ago Monday. Terry Deets won the Loved Ones Challenge and picked Shane and his son Boston to go on the reward with him and his wife. Whose loved one did he choose to go back to camp and spend the night with the rest of the tribe?
So Terry picked Shane and Boston to go with them. I believe it was the great Honey Bunny who comes back to camp with Sari.
That is correct. Sari is the correct answer. HB Honey Bunny is the loved one that got to go back with her. So Rob, you get 2 points. We're tied 2-2 going into the final round. So this is this is a game where I'm sure Akiva knows every final round this season has been trivia about the person who gets voted out. This week we had 2 people who got voted out. So we have Jeremy and Nick. The correct answer for any of these statements is going to be either just Jeremy, just Nick, both, or neither. And when we're talking about Jeremy here, it's just Cambodia. San Juan del Sur is out the window. It's just the seasons that these 2 people won. So I'm going to read a statement. You have to tell me if it applies to just Jeremy, just Nick, both, or neither. So
this is kind of weak sauce that you're just you're disqualifying one of Jeremy's seasons.
Well, it's the season they won. It's winners at war, baby. I did it first, and then I realized that none of the statements I had applied to San Juan del Sur, Jeremy, at least after I wrote a couple of the first questions. So I decided to just do the winning seasons.
Okay.
So, we have 6 of these prepared. We're going to go, we're going to do 4. If there's a tie after 4, well, the last 2 will be a tiebreaker. If you get a question wrong, you can't gain any more points unless you're still tied. So, Akiva, if you get this wrong, you open the door for Rob to win on the next question. But first, Akiva, I need you to pick a number from 1 through 6.
4. A lot of rules on this show, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just figured that out. So the statement is, this person never went to tribal before the first swap. And again, this is their winning season. So we're talking about David versus Goliath and Survivor Cambodia. This person never went to tribal before the first swap.
So I'm either saying Jeremy, Nick, neither, or both?
Correct.
I'm going to say Nick.
Nick is incorrect. It was actually Jeremy who, with Bayon, never went to tribal council. And Nick went to the second tribal, well, actually the first tribal council of the season, where Jessica Pete was voted out.
But Jeremy did go to tribal before the swap in San Juan del Sur. So I don't know why you say, like, well, this doesn't even apply to anything.
Well, because this is the fourth. Akiva picked number four. This is the fourth question I wrote. Yeah.
Oh, so the first couple you wrote, it didn't apply. But then threw that out the window, then you started including the other seasons.
Why should Jeremy get two seasons?
My whole answer, Rob. Now I demand a recount.
Okay,
but you knew the rule going in that this did not apply to San Juan Hill.
I don't even remember who Jessica Pete is, so I don't know.
So here's the good news, Akiva. Yeah, I am one correct answer away from ending this misery.
Oh, please. It's like my team is 1-14. I just want a good draft pick for next time.
Mm-hmm.
Akiva, you were so confident. You thought you could have taken a mathematical lead.
Once I thought I had it, but it's like it's the preseason game. I'm not going to overtime and caring. You know, I thought
it was like DeGrom coming out after seven innings with your 2-0 lead.
Mm-hmm. But now it's 10-2, and I don't care.
So again, Rob, this is Cambodia, Jeremy, Nick, both, or neither. The statement is, won at least two individual immunity challenges.
So Cambodia, Jeremy, and Nick definitely won more than two in David versus Goliath. Did Jeremy win two is the question. I know he won the last one. I can't remember if he won another one. I will say that it is just Nick.
Just Nick? So Nick, as you know, did win. He won the last three immunity challenges of his season. But going back to Survivor Cambodia, Jeremy only won the final four immunity challenge. So, Rob, you are correct. It was just Nick, and you win the quiz by a score of 3-2.
Darn.
Okay, there you go.
I think people want us to play the last four questions just for...
Give us the other questions real quick.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's never had a vote against them that counted by not counted. So if it's not negated by an idol, it doesn't count as a vote.
Wait, say this again?
Never had a vote against them that counted.
Never had a vote against them that counted.
So a vote against them that was negated by an idol doesn't count as a vote.
Is
that both, Rob?
I'm trying to think. Did Nick ever get voted against?
I really haven't rewatched any of the season, the third. I'll wait for TOS. I'll rewatch them then.
I'm trying to think. This is a really tough one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if anybody would have cast votes against Nick. I don't think so.
Who hasn't been voted against this season?
Tony.
Just Tony.
Just Tony?
Which is insane, but yeah, it's just Tony.
Let's say neither.
I think Ben's voted for every person right, and Tony has not. Is that correct, or have they voted together? I think maybe they voted together every time, but Ben's also voted for the right person.
Tony, I think, got screwed on the everybody voted for Denise. I don't know if there's another time where Tony voted wrong.
Ben's batting 1,000.
Yeah. So, Jordan, what's the answer?
The answer is both. Jeremy had three votes at the final six, but they were all negated, and Nick was never voted against. So they both never had a vote cast against them.
That's right. I knew what you meant.
You said that before.
Yeah. Okay. What's the last question for the very intellectually curious?
Okay. So, Akiva, who do you think is the first Survivor winner
/
to follow
glutton for punishment? Wait, isn't there a fourth question?
We're going. I thought you were referring to the Twitter. Okay, but yeah, we can do it. Remained on the same tribe for the entire pre-merge.
That's just Jeremy.
That's correct. Yeah, Jeremy was on Bion the whole time, and Nick went to Jebeni.
Mm-hmm. And Jeremy did stay in the same tribe for San Juan del Sur.
Yeah, he stayed on Hunapu.
Okay.
So, Akiva, who's the first survivor you followed on survivor winner you followed on Twitter? You don't follow a lot of survivors on Twitter.
I don't follow survivors, yeah, unless I know them personally. I'm going to say nobody. I don't think I've ever followed one.
Oh, you follow Jeremy Collins, first survivor winner you follow on Twitter.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, you know why? Yeah, I wasn't thinking that because Jeremy and I follow each other because we played fantasy football together. That's correct.
Yes. Yeah.
I think maybe I used to follow Tyson, but like, listen, we're both RGB podcasters. He doesn't follow me. I can't.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
If he wants to run that bump, he's welcome.
Yeah. I really am very concerned about the Rotten Coconuts Fantasy Football League that I play in. I texted Dom Abate that I feel like our league is being torn apart, that we have Jeremy, we have Ben, we have Sarah playing in the league. Oh. like, I'm just like, oh, yeah, in hindsight, like, I feel like there wasn't that much chatter among the league. Like, I feel like the people were pretty quiet last season.
Yeah, I think, listen. Best case scenario, we'll have 100 fantasy football leagues if there's football.
Mm-hmm.
People will be so excited for fantasy football.
All right. There you go. Akiva, anything else you want to say?
No, what a delight to come on with my friend Jordan
Kalish. This was fun.
Yeah, I have a good time. I like Jordan. We like to tease him. But Jordan gets, Jordan is a sport. He comes on my podcast a bunch. And maybe one day he'll make a second Renap appearance, but probably not. I'd have to think of what that would entail.
Well, I think it's fine. I mean, look, if anyone comes up with a goodwill idea, the last one, by the way, you did say, I know you have said that it's a bottom tier, bottom tier Renap episode. I listened to it. Yeah. I don't think it's top tier Renap, but I don't think it's bottom tier Renap.
It's a different standard. You're saying like the worst episode is still like, wow, for a podcast, it's still pretty good. I agree. But yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'd have to re-listen, and I've never listened to one of my podcasts. So I don't know.
And you did the poll. You did the poll, and I think you said that like it got sort of like an average rating, which is fine.
Probably said that to every guest. Like, oh yeah, yours was fine. Everyone else, they got crushed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you didn't say it to me. You said it. You said it on the podcast.
Oh yeah, yeah. Rob guessed
that it was going to be bottom five.
I have no recollection.
But anyway, I if someone comes up with a good idea
on the sport
And look, it wasn't my idea. This Week in Robin Akiva was not my idea. I don't know who came up with it, but I never thought it was going to be like a slam dunk podcast.
Okay.
I made the most of a bad idea.
Okay. All right.
We're inside baseball.
Well, I think we got it. We got it. of course, you can listen to Akiva every week on Robin Akiva Need a Podcast. Listen to Akiva take Cosmo quizzes. Jordan, would you think that if you took a Cosmo quiz, do you think you're good girl hot or bad girl hot?
I think I'm bad girl
or
hot.
Cute.
What did it say in the YouTube comments, Akiva? Was Jordan good girl hot or bad girl hot?
The YouTube comments, which ones?
That's a callback to when Jordan was on the round table in the preseason.
Oh, and I don't remember. And someone said that Jordan's really hot?
Yeah, you don't remember this?
Someone wrote on social media they would die for Jordan Kalish.
Yes,
I know who that was. Look, I mean, I can't keep track of all the times that people are calling me hot, so I don't remember if it was good girl hot or bad girl hot. I think I have a little bit of an edge. I think it's kind of bad girl hot.
Does Jordan Kalish have an edge?
Oh, a bad boy edge. I don't think so. I think he has such a good guy edge really that people assume that there's a dark side, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think there is. I think I think it's all light. Yeah, but does it tamper a little bit that everyone said the same thing about Chester? It's like, ooh, Chester is much hotter than I thought.
Oh, is Chester good girl hot or bad girl hot?
A lot of people were into Chester, and also a lot of people said Chester looks like Taryn.
Yes. Without context, people are probably very confused that was a quiz
that we took
with Liana.
Hair. Maybe the hair.
Are you good girl hot or bad girl hot?
Even with context, they might not know what we're talking about.
Yes, and it's a quiz for women. Not to say that what kind of women find you attractive. No, that is not the quiz we talk. All right. Of course, you can also listen to Akiva Talk Sports with Alexander Chester on the 32 Fans podcast. Currently, they ranked the top announcing calls of all time, 30-21.
Yep. That's what people are lining up on the streets for that. I just need sports back, Rob. I'm so sad. I need someone to start playing sports.
Yeah. Akiva, where did Michael Kay's call of Derek Jeter's last hit at Yankee Stadium, which was a walk-off single?
I would never put a Yankee call
history,
in the top
history
50.
With an exclamation point. I think that's pretty good.
I would never even consider having Yankee call in my top 50. It's not canon of baseball to me.
Yeah.
I'll have the Mariano Rivera giving up the hit to the Diamondbacks. I'll put that in. Yeah.
I still haven't watched that video since 2001.
Akiva, yeah. It's still my dream to call a baseball game. If you can get MLB
we
the show, I'd do it on 32 Fans Podcast.
Yeah, we could definitely make room for you. I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, I think that'd be
super
fun. You
think Chester would be a good third man in the booth if we did that on 32 Fans?
Yeah, who's the Gary, Keith, and Ron?
He's a stat guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is Chester more the analyst or the play-by-play guy?
I think you're the play-by-play guy, and Chester, I'm just going with the quips, and Chester has the hard stats, I think.
Okay, yeah.
You're the broadcaster.
Yeah. I'm Gary, he's Ron, and you're Keith.
He has a lot of Gary in him, but I think ultimately you have to be the play-by-play guy.
Yeah. All right, there you go. So, Jordan Kalish is on Twitter, at Jordan Kalish. Yes. Jordan, you working on anything fun?
On Twitter, no.
Okay.
I mean, I'm playing Mafia tonight with people who are probably listening to this. But besides that, nothing's really going on.
Okay. All right. So there you go. Check out what Jordan Kalish has going on social media. We will be back with a season finale edition of This Week in Survivor. Of course, if you want to help contribute to the goal of $23,000 to raise money for PPE for doctors and nurses, and maybe just as importantly, to make Mike Bloom get a Survivor tattoo, you can do it one of two ways. If you want to become a patron, we are taking those patron contributions that you are making, new patrons, and then I am going to match them through the end of the Survivor season. Or you can go ahead and go to robiswebsite.com/PPE charity. That's our GoFundMe that we set up, which is currently over $11,000. So we're looking for $23,000 total to be raised for directrelief.org. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out The Wiggle Room coming up next on your podcast feed. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.